Andrew Kados, member for South Bowen. Good morning.
Good morning, Mitchell. How are you today?
Very well indeed. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, sorry I couldn't make it in the studio today, but I've had a strange sort of day, so I've on the run a little bit today.
Not a problem at all. Always good to catch up. Now, tell us about the state budget and your reaction.
Well, from the state budget from Geelong perspective, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors in it. Obviously, the biggest spend is the new jail out at Lara. Now, obviously, the government's been under a lot of pressure with law and order, whether it's police, bail, corrections, etc. They had to build the new jail. They were forced to build it, so they've chosen Lara to build it. But look, the city deal, it's very difficult for the feds at the moment. They were given effectively 7 to 10 days before their federal budget. They'll finally sent something about the city deal, and they've got to have time to digest it, which is fair enough. They can't just hand over $153 million without taking a look at what's being asked for. And then you start to look at some of the other things, like the in inverted commas, I'll say, the bullet train, like a study into a bullet train. I think I had a look on Twitter this morning, so the rail users are fed up with the present system we've got. What makes anyone who uses V-Line on a regular basis think that if the Labor government, Daniel Andrews, cannot even get our present rail system right, that they're going to deliver a bullet train for Geelong?
Well, on some of those points, I mean, the bullet train, first of all, do you think that the economics of that will stack up? They've put in this money to do a study on that, but it'll obviously be contingent on whether the economics stack up as to whether it goes ahead.
Yeah, well, some of the experts that rail experts I've spoken to have given figures of $15 billion to build it. And then the other issue is that sometimes with these bullet trains, they need a certain distance of track to be economically viable. They've got to get up to a certain speed. And normally the minimum distances for those is about 200 kilometres of track, which we don't have. So I'm just sort of trying to work out how they're going to make it viable.
I was reading a very...
The thing with the bullet train, Mitchell, is we've got to get our present system right, for goodness sake, before we even start entertaining any of these thoughts.
Well, on the present system, how do we do that? I mean, is it about ordering more rolling stock? Is it about putting the trains back through Werribee and having that service instead of servicing Tarneit and Wyndham Vale? What would you do to fix up the current system? What's the biggest annoyance of commuters?
Well, I think you could put all of the above to what you just said there, Mitchell. First of all, we need to get that track duplicated between South Geelong Station and Warm Ponds. That's essential. The greater capacity at this end of the line, more rolling stock is required, and we have to upgrade our tracks and signals. It's not rocket science. And then you've got the issue with Tarneit and Wyndham Vale, as you've pointed out, particularly in the morning and evening peaks. You've got a lot of users wanting to get on and off at those stations, and they are effectively clogging the Geelong system. What needs to happen is for a separate train to be running to Tarneit and Wyndham Vale in the peak hours.
So we would have an express service to Geelong for the Geelong commuters and more of a shuttle service to Tarneit and Wyndham Vale for those commuters.
That's what should be done, because when you look at it, Mitchell, you've got a system. You know, the regional rail link was first brought about on the Brumby and Gillard, and it was badged as being for Geelong, Ballarat, Bendigo, but it's ended up becoming a commuter service for Melbourne's western suburbs. And from my way of thinking, I think that was always Brumby and Gillard's intention, was to somehow badge this as a regional fix, but it's actually for Melbourne's western suburbs, and that's what's ended up happening.
Just reading about the city deal, I read a very interesting editorial or opinion piece about this, which basically said that we're all suffering on the so-called Sardine Express and trying to get funding for these projects while the politicians bicker. I mean, there's a lot of bickering going on between the feds and the state. The state government saying that we've been left out in the cold. The feds are saying what you've just said, which is that the state didn't get the costings in on time. I mean, surely at some point Geelong has to come first, and we have to get above all of this bickering and carrying on and just get on and fix these problems.
Oh, look, I agree, Mitchell, but there's a process to follow. You can't just ask another level of government for $153 million, give them the paperwork and the business cases a week before, and then 7 days later, lo and behold, it wasn't in the federal budget, to beat your chest and say, oh, they haven't funded it. You know, that's it'd be like walking into wanting a bank loan and walking into a bank 2 weeks earlier and saying you want a loan, and the bank requests paperwork and all manner of things, which is quite standard practice. And then you walk in 2 weeks later and stamp your fists on the counter and say, where's my money? I want my money. You haven't given me my loan. And the bank quite rightly says, you haven't given any paperwork or filled out any documentation. Surely people that need to understand, it doesn't matter whether you're Liberal or Labor, there's a process you've got to follow to ask another level of government for money.
Now, just on the TAFE issue, this is very interesting. The government has announced all of these courses are going to be free under TAFE. First of all, is that an idea that you support?
Well, when you look at the under Daniel Andrews, there's now 151,000 less people in government-subsidised training than there was when he came to office. You've got a system that was brought in by John Brumby, and actually Jacinta Allen was the minister responsible, who went to an uncapped system, a market-driven system. So you've had this situation where people could apply for any course and be subsidised. Now, the reality is there's a limited bucket of money. And I think, Mitchell, it's those two words, it's called election year. And that's what Daniel Andrews is up to now. He's realised that TAFE has, there's 151,000 less people in subsidised training under his watch. And with an election looming in November, he's trying to make things look good all of a sudden.
Darren Cheeseman says that if Matthew Guy was to form government, it would be a disaster because you would, quote, rip the guts out of TAFE.
Well, if we've ripped the guts out of TAFE, why are there 151,000 less people in subsidised training under Daniel Andrews' watch? I suppose that's the question I would put to Mr. Cheeseman.
Do you have a plan to cut funding to TAFE?
No, we have no plan to cut funding to TAFE.
Well, then where is he getting this information from?
Well, it's the same. You have to ask Darren Cheeseman that question. I have no idea where he's getting that information from.
In terms of the cost of living, this is another big deal that people are concerned about, the fact that energy prices are going up. What do you think is being done about that, and what would you do differently?
Well, the centrepiece of Daniel Andrews' budget was to give everyone $50 to go look at an energy-saving website. I think that's one of the most absurd policies I've ever seen, to actually say, here's $50 to go look at a website, and whether you change electricity or gas providers or not, here's your $50 bribe. To me, it's just an outrageous waste of taxpayers' money. You can simply have a much lower cost education campaign to get people to look at different energy providers and shop around. But I certainly wouldn't be doing that. And the reason we're in this mess is because Daniel Andrews sat back and allowed Hazelwood to close. He allowed one quarter of Victoria's power generation to close, stood by idly and watched, and now we're in the situation we're in where wholesale electricity prices in the last 12 months have gone up by about 85%.
But short of building new coal-fired power stations, we're never really going to get that back, are we?
Well, we should have made more of an effort to keep the one we had before we closed it. And what they're failing to do is that it's fine to invest in renewables, whether it's wind or solar, but till we have that generating and storage capacity, we have to rely on our baseload power, which is our coal-fired stations here in Victoria. As capacity increases over a staged period, you would wind back some of the coal generation. That's a logical course of action, but to shut down 25% of our generation with nothing to replace it, there's only one thing that can happen. Prices go up and you've got potential of blackouts.
Now, just on the traffic light situation that we spoke about last month, I believe those traffic lights are now turned on, but someone's commented on Facebook that you got it wrong. There was no red light camera there.
Well, Mitchell, look, when you're in opposition, you get information. People sometimes give you stuff that isn't correct. Generally, most of the things I say are correct. I'm quite happy to say that one was not correct. I'm not going to sit here and try and make any reasons or excuses about it. It wasn't a speed camera, but it's still 6 months to switch a set of lights on was simply an argument between... You know, the argument between Vic Roads and Power Corps, it's just ridiculous. 6 months, they had a similar thing happened down in Torquay Beach Road. Thankfully, that one was only about 3 months. But why are they sitting here arguing with each other? I just don't understand it.
As far as you know, though, was there a delay in waiting for some sort of component, or even if it wasn't a red light camera, a control box? What was the actual cause of the delay?
Look, the Vic Roads isn't upfront about what the reason is. They refuse to say anything. Look, and to be quite frank, the question about the speed camera was put to Vic Roads directly by the Geelong Advertiser. They refused to answer it. If that was not correct, why didn't they simply say, no, that's incorrect? It only fuelled the speculation about it, I must admit, Mitchell.
Now, on the so-called rot situation, where are we at with that? And I believe there's now going to be more of an investigation into this. The reason being, of course, is that Geelong was sort of connected to this because the whistleblower was actually working for the member for Lara.
Mr. Finnegan was working for the member for Lara. Look, there's going to be an upper house Privileges Committee investigation into this. So that will be an interesting thing. But the lower house members, such as John Aaron and Lisa Neville, are hiding behind the fact that because it's an upper house inquiry, they're refusing to give evidence. Now, the issue we've got with Mr. Aaron is that, as far as information that I've been given, he's continued to put... When Mr. Finnegan's employment finished, he employed someone else to between April and October in the same role. But because he's in the lower house, he said that I'm refusing to give evidence to the ombudsman, and in fact to any upper house inquiry.
And where do you think this is all going to end up? Will we actually get any definitive results before the election?
Well, look, I really don't know where this is going to end up from that perspective, but all I know is that the Labor Party has rorted a minimum of $400,000 from the Victorian taxpayer, and I think it's actually a lot more. But because lower house members are refusing to cooperate with any questions or the inquiry, the full amount may never be known, in fact. But, you've got a situation where they just... I don't know what it is with the Labor Party. They can't help themselves with public money.
Assault.
When you look at it, their main defence is that, oh, we've always done this and everyone does it. Well, the fact remains that the only party that did this was the Labor Party. The Liberals and Nationals did not do any of these arrangements, and as far as I'm aware, nor did the Greens.
Assaults on paramedics and emergency services workers. This is something that's attracting quite a bit of media coverage. What sort of criminal justice response would you like to see? Would you perhaps consider mandatory sentencing if someone is found to do this?
Well, I'd like to see our judiciary actually uphold the laws of this state. When you've got an emergency services worker, whether it's, in this case, it was an ambulance officer who's assaulted, there's a six-month minimum. And to reflect the will of society, that's what I would like to start seeing. But the issue we've got here, Mitchell, is that the government, the Labor Party, has been in power now for 15 of the last 19 years in Victoria. They've made the vast majority of the appointments to our judiciary. So they're reflecting effectively the bleeding hearts of the violin players have all been put on our judiciary.
Now, when I last had Darren Cheeseman on the program, I gave him a free kick question, so it's only fair if I do the same for you. Free kick, talk about any issue that you would like.
Well, I think when you're looking at the next state election, Mitchell, we've got a choice here in Geelong at the moment. You look at our state budget, there was very little for South Barwon electorate, in fact Geelong as a whole, with the exception of some upgrades to some schools, which is welcome. No one's going to complain about upgrading schools. There was very little for a growing city in Geelong. We've got one of the fastest growth rates. Nothing was done to fix our rail system. No roads money was announced. No infrastructure money. And that's going to be the critical thing at this next election, is how our infrastructure funding is done.
Very good. Andrew, thank you very much for being on the program. Always good to catch up, and we'll do so again next month.
Mitchell, I'll try and make it into the studio next time.
Be good to see you. Thank you very much.
Very
Andrew
good.
Kados there, member for South Barwon. Always good to speak to him about what's been happening in South Barwon, because South Barwon is where it's happening. It's the most marginal seat.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.